Havocamp. Over here, Mr. Havocamp.
Welcome, everybody, to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day talking about HR with people who are getting it done. So it's happy, definitely happy Wednesday. And I'm really, really excited to for our guest today because we've not had her on before. We definitely have had one of her team on and absolutely adore her. So let's get to the guest. So, Molly McCoy, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Thank you, Brian. It's good to be here.
Well, we'll just kick it off because you got so many amazing things to say. I need you to change my life in the next 28 minutes. I'm just saying, I'm up in the game a little bit here. So no,
oh
no
gosh,
pressure.
That's no pressure at all.
Yeah.
So
well,
I was
the low bar, but
yeah, I was talking, my husband and asked me this morning, now, what are you doing today and what are you talking about on the show? And I said, you know, honestly, it's whatever I pick, which kind of frightened him a little bit as far as what the subject matter might be. But so I have two things that have been on my mind lately, and they're kind of HR-ish, but not – so you guys can pick. I'll just tell you what they are. How's that?
I like it. Before we jump into that, before we go down that route, I'd love to pick. I love that. That sounds great because I always pick wrong, and that makes it really awesome. Introduce yourself real quick, and then we'll jump into what's top of mind.
Sure. So I'm Molly McCoy. I'm the CEO and founder of HRQ by day and by well, I guess 24/7, it's still by day and also by night. Proud mother of three lovely children, reside in Denver, Colorado, and those are the highlights. I guess that's the big stuff.
What's the ages of the kiddos?
12, 8, and 7.
And the boy-girl ratio?
Girl-boy-girl.
Girl-boy-girl. I know nothing of girls. I've got a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, both boys. So
both boys.
I don't. Yeah, I
yeah,
got nothing. I
don't know.
I give you
the
no
girl
advice.
Boy girl ratio. That's a gift for us. It works well.
What I heard is that your husband is now he doesn't have as many votes because he's only got the one other person that he can kind of side with. So you end up doing a lot of girl-related stuff. So what I heard. Is that true?
Yeah, well, we keep it pretty balanced. But, yeah, I think you're reading between the lines pretty well.
It's funny, my
wife.
You
guys have fewer votes to start with, even if it is
yeah,
equal.
Right. Yeah, we have only a 25% vote to a full one. It's funny, my
right.
wife already feels ganged up on. Like, she already feels... like my 3-year-old and my 7-year-old are already ganging up on her. I'm like, no, there's nothing concerted yet, but I'm sure there will be years to come. So
yeah,
tell
absolutely.
Us the two ideas. Pitch us the two ideas. Let's get idea number one, idea number two. Let's see what's behind these doors.
Yeah. And like I said, given our seat at HRQ, we see kind of a gamut as far as what's going on in HR as far as trends and, you know, especially nationally with the client base we work with, it's a pretty diverse set of businesses. But so that would be the logical thing for me to talk about, but it's not necessarily, I don't want to say there's not anything new and exciting in that lane. There definitely is. And, you know, there are some cool things that we're seeing, but what's been on my mind lately are these two different things. So the first is, really more from the CEO seat and as far as HRQ specifically, and also other business leaders that I'm friends with or that are clients, whatever the case may be, there's this whole concept of how versus what that's been on my mind. And it's really kind of when you think about the change of the business landscape over the decades to service and technology businesses, and really the how we do what we do to get work done versus what we're doing, and the significance of the how. So that's one thing, and that's probably pretty
what's
big.
What's idea number two?
So in number two, actually has to do with a topic that I really haven't been that interested in over the years, but it has to do with women in business, and specifically in leadership positions, and also specific to entrepreneurship. So I was, and Sheryl Sandberg's book is kind of lit or maybe relit or reignited this whole conversation as far as women in business. But specifically, I was asked to help identify business CEOs, female CEOs, with certain size, running certain size revenue companies. I thought, well, you know, that'll be easy to do. And net is there aren't many. So, and I can dive into more detail if you want to talk about that.
Oh,
topic,
yeah.
But
let's start there. Both these dovetail each other quite nicely, actually. But let's start with women in business. As I am keenly aware, as I'm researching a lot of STEM-related stuff for my sons, because I think that getting them involved with STEM is going to be extremely important. So I'm keenly aware of this. And I think that what if you were to identify what is the one or two barriers that you see when you look across to those that are CEOs, to those that are not CEOs, and figure out the gender ratio, and you're overwhelmed with the large majority of these folks are male, what's holding, I say holding women back, that's not really the right phrase, but what's the barrier to that?
Yeah, well, let me give you a little context and backdrop first as far as my own experience, because it's relevant to what I think the barriers are. So first of all, I when I think back to my corporate HR days, we had the good fortune of working in companies where women were simply represented in leadership at the C-level and down through the ranks. And not every company that I worked at when I was in manufacturing, it was definitely less female dominated and was more accustomed to being the only maybe female, you know, in the on the leadership team. But for the most part, the organizations that I work for, it just, you know, you look down the hall and in the office and the top floor, where the case may be, women were very much represented in leadership positions. So then fast forward to last summer, maybe right around this time last year, I joined a YPO, Young Presidents Organization, and a buddy of mine, he said, hey, you know, you should look at joining, here's why. I'm like, all right, sounds good. I joined, you know, I see him a few weeks later, he says, oh, by the way, I've teed you up to actually be on the board and help me with membership. We'd like to have more diversity in our membership, and specifically female leaders getting involved. So, like, hey, not a problem. I mean, this is the guy you've fallen short for. He's just a good guy. I'm like, I'm going to help you regardless. So happy to do it in a more, you know, formal position. So I'm like, how hard can that be? So I look around Denver and, you know, intentionally seeking out women who are 44 years of age or under, and because that's criteria, the young part of the presidents of the YPO. And secondly, at that point, the criteria has since changed, but running businesses at least $8 million in revenue or larger, which has since been moved up to $12 million. And so I couldn't find any. Zero. And I it was really eye-opening for me, and I was stunned. And, you know, I found some great leaders of staff scale of businesses and female leaders that were over 45, because essentially it takes us a little bit more time to kind of get the momentum, especially if we are having a family. But it was just shocking to me. I mean, very, very eye-opening, and it took a while for me to kind of get past, you know, the question, why aren't women growing their businesses? And then on the more macro level, you know, looking at, you know, from Fortune 500 on down, it's you know, we're dropping out.
Do you, as you analyze, and first of all, Denver's a big city, so it's not like you're in, you know, Frisco, Texas, and you did this. You're in a large city with a very large net, and you had trouble finding people. And, of course, your background, both in running a recruiting firm and being able to source talent, I can't help but think that you have a pretty extensive network, and you know how to find people. So what it means to me is, that you really looked, you cast a really wide net, and you couldn't find anybody. Is that a choice? Is that people or a system or something like that that kind of keeps people out? Or do you believe in your heart of heart that that's a choice that men and women, and in this case, women are making not to do to lead or to be a CEO, et cetera?
Yeah, I think it's blended. It's two part. That, you know, I think of my own experiences as well as far as starting a business. You know, I was a bit disenchanted with corporate, just as far as I guess politics and, you know, just really being productive, especially in the HRC felt, you know. So I think that's a piece of it, that women are opting out, and I actually think the entrepreneurial spirit is definitely alive and well in women, but they kind of cap out at a certain threshold of growth. And most of my friends, I think, are very established in their careers and their professions, tend to be in larger corporate settings and at all levels as well, but they do tend to, you know, there's, I don't want to say it's a glass ceiling, because I don't think that's the case. I think that's where the choice comes in as far as something giving, kind of where they cap out or kind of choose to plateau or step back for whatever reason it might be. You know, family or just, yeah.
I'm assuming you read Lean In. What's the one thing you got out of it? Like, if you're talking to the audience about it, what's the one thing that you got out of that book?
You know, I actually haven't read it yet in its entirety. I've read two interviews of Cheryl, and I've seen a couple TV interviews. I did buy the book for a colleague of mine and had asked her to flip it back to me when she was done with it. But I think part of it, the second piece that was really eye-opening for me, which is a message in the book, has to do with, you know, how girls are raised differently than boys, and specifically, you know, kind of how they play together, and, you know, girls tend to be nicer. I think the biggest thing is that women, you know, girls and into womanhood ask for permission first. So, and I had just an amazing example of this happen in the workplace recently, where an individual, you know, came to me with this great idea, process improvement, but was asking permission to do, you know, what just was great, you know, seemed like a logical one. I said, you realize you just asked me permission to do this. I said, instead of that, you know, you can show up in a leadership in the light of a leader and explain to me, hey, here's what I'm doing. Here's why. You know, do you have any input or suggestions? But then go off and do it. So it's a difference in the conversation, but it is a leadership, someone taking the lead versus asking permission. And I think women tend to ask for permission first, kind of for the rules versus just kind of breaking trail. I think, secondly, another observation that I saw recently, there was a gentleman I was in conversation with And he was CEO of a business and was talking about just the nature of their business. They have these 50-plus year contracts. I'm like, wow, how do you get a 50-year contract with a company? I'd love that. And, you know, there was a conversation around that, but some of the terms that he's talking with, he says, hey, it doesn't really matter. You know, I'll be retired by then. And unless my son, you know, decides to take over the business, it's kind of irrelevant. And he had just got done explaining to me that he had a son and a daughter, so that the assumption was automatically in his mind that only his son would be the one to take it over. And the kids, his kids are like 5 and 2. It was really sad, I thought. So I think, you know, there is some, you know, sadly, still in our society, just that mentality that exists. And especially dads to their daughters, it's really important how, you know, how they communicate with their daughters and kind of what shadow that casts onto their kids. It's really, really important.
Hey, Molly, the question I have, do you think, because you talked about you see a lot of entrepreneurial women that their organizations cap out on revenue size. Do you think there potentially is a layer of bias built into capital raising? I mean, it's an old school, huge boys club, but it's just that much harder.
I'm so glad you asked that question. So I was in L.A. last week for 3 days, and specifically at a conference, or it was more like a workshop, just for that topic. And the session was around, it was specifically for CEOs who either want to sell their business, buy, be on the acquisition path, or recapitalize. And, you know, the subject matter was from A to Z around those various topics. Of 60 individuals, I was the only female in the room. And, you know, once again, I was really shocked. I'm like, I could one or two more people be here possibly? And even some of my friends who are women who are in the private equity sector, they're typically the only person in their firm. So I think it's sophistication around that, around how funding works. And not necessarily access to capital, because the access is there. I just don't think women take the risks. I think that it's a huge difference between how men and women lead is the risk that they're willing to take.
Fantastic. Well, let me do a quick reset. Everybody listening to Drive Through HR, Brian and William on with Molly McCoy, based out of Denver, Colorado. And so, Molly, kind of continue on the path. What are some things that you would recommend, especially on this topic, how dads can actually level set, dads, uncles, brothers, whatever, you know, men can actually level set that out and be more intentful or conscious about making sure that they don't, you know, do those automatic biases that they don't even really maybe know they're doing, right?
Yeah, I think it really is as simple as an awareness of just the difference, and especially if a family has mixed gender as far as the kids, you know, and how dads and moms interact, you know, if they do differently, you know, with their boys or daughters versus their sons. I think it is simply an awareness, and it is subtle things. I mean, my father was always really, hey, you can do or be whatever you want, you know, and just left it at that. It wasn't, and I remember him specifically saying those words. We were at the University of Michigan. I must have been elementary school age, and we were at the law school, and there are a quadrant outside of the law school, and it's just beautiful. I mean, the building's beautiful, and him commenting at that point, hey, if you wanted to do that or anything that you want to do, you can. So to also, and I think this is mentioned in Cheryl's book, to leave, or someone had mentioned this to me recently, to leave that wide open versus saying, oh, you can be whatever you want, you know, a doctor or this or that, rather than defining it, you know, having it open-ended. It's almost says more than, you know, saying something specific.
Nice. Well, thank you for sharing that. Quick story. I've got a friend who's a senior, basically owns a consulting firm now, but was a senior trainer, does instructional design. Her father was a management consultant, right? And she's the prime example of you can do anything, because when she was like 5 years old, he used to literally pay her a quarter for every way that she could come up different when they would, because her and her brother used to have to take turns washing the dishes and doing chores. And so they would each get, she would get paid 25 cents for each different way that she could wash and dry the dishes, right? 6 years old.
I love it.
And hilarious, because she traveled every 2 weeks. He was a management consultant, right? So he would do like optimization audits and stuff. So he would take the kids with him for 2 weeks, and she's like, she literally talks about being in the break room, you know, at a company for like a morning, because her dad's actually doing an audit or a presentation. Her and her brother would be down playing in the break room at some factory in, you know, southern Indiana, right? So the sky's the limit with her, and she's so creative, and there's really like no boundaries. And that's, you know, and again, we're talking, you know, awareness. So great conversation, because I think this is super,
I love that story.
Super important.
I think with summer upon us too, and I'm sorry I'm derailing here, but one of the things we're going to do with our kids, and it has to do with finance, and I think it goes back to kind of just a general business conversation and how businesses operate, and especially in HR, I can, you know, make that whole linkage back to the business knowledge. But so our three kiddos, we're going to take a set amount of money, and not a large amount, but set up an account for each of them, and we're going to play a little stock market game and teach each of them, you know, how to buy stock, what to look for in a company, and, you know, it'll be kind of fun and competitive, because they can have a little contest to see, you know, whose values are going up and hopefully not down, but they're going up more. But even the conversations have started as far as, you know, who Warren Buffett is, and, you know, buy things that you're interested, you know, in companies that you have an interest in. So our son immediately was like, oh, Apple, I want Apple. I'm like, well, you know, honey, you might just get one share then. So it's just, and it sounds totally nerdy and geeky, but I just think it'll be really fun, especially with two daughters that might not necessarily naturally go down that lane, and to have all three participate in this the same way. So
nice. You know, Molly, we didn't get into it at the beginning, but your firm specializes in something that I think our audience would find fascinating. And insofar as you've worked in HR, you've got a firm now that actually helps places full-time and, I guess, in some ways, kind of a fractional ownership, HR leaders. So you have looked at a ton of resumes at some point, probably still, and you looked at these resumes. And I'd like to actually pivot into what can people do, HR practitioners do, to really position themselves for advancement? And when they look at their own experience, what do you look at, and it either dings them, or you look at an experience and you're like, that's interesting, I can do something with that, et cetera. Take us into that world.
Yeah, I would say there's an audience or a population out there that, in the, you know, I'll call it the top 10 percentile, you know, depending on the day, we might shrink that to 5%. Other days we might broaden it to 20% as far as the profession. And sometimes we get a little cynical, which, you know, hopefully the audience can appreciate or cut me a little slack with. But, you know, our clients, I have high expectations as far as when it comes to search and how, you know, who they're going to hire and bring in, and typically are looking for, you know, best in class and best practices and, you know, truly those individuals who can move their business forward through good people practices. So I would say the things we get excited about just purely from the resume or the piece of paper, certain industries, when we see individuals that work in certain industries that just tend to be more complex, and also those companies and our industries that are known for better, just stronger management practices in general. And it doesn't hurt when it's a brand or a company that's just financially performed incredibly well for someone to have been on that journey, as far as how, and that they can tell the story of how the HR systems and infrastructure have helped drive that financial success. That's always compelling. And it's just sometimes it's more fun, too, if it's a consumer brand.
All right, let me ask about certifications, degrees in HR, and social, i.e. that they have some acumen related to social. Do you care about any of that shit?
Not as much as other things. So, hey, you know, if someone's been, is Cornell, is coming out of an Ivy League school or just a really great university, you know, we'll take that in a second. You know, it doesn't hurt. It just to kind of have the IQ box checks that, hey, you know, they have some horsepower there, and it presents well, you know. But is it a deal breaker? No, it's just, it's an extra bonus. Certifications other than CEBS, or I'm sorry, CCP, a comp certification, rarely are we asked for that. And rarely do our clients really care about it. Anything extra education-wise, though, I go back to, you know, it's a bonus. It shows, I think, individuals' commitment to the profession and whatnot, but it's not something we really get that excited about. You know, if someone has a CPA, I'm probably a little bit more excited about that, frankly, than some of the HR certifications. I would take an MBA over maybe a functional master's. Just as it depends what the undergrad is, but, you know, would definitely take that business acumen in a second.
As it relates to social, if they have a LinkedIn profile or they're not on Twitter or any of those types of things, do y'all care about that type of stuff?
I think LinkedIn is a given these days, that at least that someone's on there. How active they are, I don't really think it matters. I think it depends what they're doing in HR as well. I mean, if someone's in talent management or talent acquisition, yeah, they better be active in social. But, you know, otherwise, I wouldn't say it would necessarily improve their candidacy or their attractiveness to an organization. Geographically, I think it makes a little bit of a difference, too, or industry-wise, if they're in the tech sector or if they're working in that area, then they better be active and users. But I wouldn't, you know, might help a little bit, but it's not 100% necessary.
Nice. Well, Molly, we got about a minute and 30 seconds left. Time flies, and we are having an absolute ball. So, what's probably the last? What's the final thing that you can leave with our listeners and with us that would inspire us today?
Oh, geez, no pressure there. I feel like we're a little bit all over the place. You know, I guess for the HR listeners. Just, and I'll go back to the topic we didn't focus on, but maybe part of it is that take risks and really focus on the how you're doing, what you're doing, and show up, be compelling, and move the needle. That's about it.
Got it, folks. You heard it there. I will try and do all of that between 1 and 3 today. I will get it on the schedule. So, well, Molly, thank you so much for spending lunch with us. It was an absolute pleasure. Love your firm. Absolutely love your firm. You guys do, and the folks in it. So keep doing what you are doing, and we will be back on tomorrow. gosh, I forgot what day it was. So, and we'll try and get you maybe on later and kind of get an update of where and what you got going on. So, folks, we're out of here.